Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 696. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, I am just enjoying a Thursday night foosball game between the Cincinnati Bengals and Jacksonville Jaguars. It looks like the Tony Khans are ahead 13-0 at the current moment. So that is something. I did not see that one coming. I'm pretty sure I picked the Bengals in my pick'em league, so this is not a good start for them. you know, Jeremy and I left the plate wide open for us to talk about whatever this week in wrestling, because we didn't really concentrate on a whole lot. I had one thought that I did not express to him, which was, I guess I was still okay with my decision not to go to Extreme Rules. The most interesting match that I said that I wanted to see live, I do think turned out the best, that being Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair. Obviously, it had a very interesting finish also, with the return of one Sasha Banks. And I guess that's a big return to talk about. You know, I do not feel like, has there ever been a reason for why she has been out? It's just been she has been out, correct?
Like, yeah, it's just been she was out. Yet no one's talking.
Yeah, like she, I don't feel like she's done any like cryptic tweeting that people start to overanalyze. Or anything like that, even. Like, I feel like sometimes the superstars will kind of let little things slip here and there. But I don't feel like she said anything. The WWE hasn't said anything. It's been very, very strange.
Indeed has.
But anyway, it is good to have her back. Like, and I've got to admit, I would have been pretty excited to see that return, even though, you know, obviously she has been on the roster somewhat regularly here, and it was just, what, a month or two off, I would say?
Not even, definitely not two. Just over a month, a little over a month, yeah.
So yeah, but it was it's a nice surprise. It's definitely something that you know, needs to be addressed in the draft upcoming here. I mean, I don't know how many times we've said that the women's division, especially on Raw, is hurting.
Yeah, it's definitely hurting. It'll be interesting to see where they go with all of this. Obviously, the ending of that match points towards a triple threat match. When that match will be, I have no idea. I have it hard to believe all three of them will end up on the same show after the draft. So I don't know if they're just going to do the match on Friday night on SmackDown. Still push it off to maybe Crown Jewel, since that's becoming more a women friendly environment. Little by little, but I also don't see them keeping all three of them on SmackDown. Especially since over on Raw, it's looking like Alexa Bliss is taking some more time off. And Charlotte Flair has literally beaten everybody else. And she's also beaten Alexa, too. She has beaten everybody. In a 5-week period, Charlotte Flair beat everyone of worth in the Raw Women's Division.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beat them. Either pin them or beat them tap. In 5 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I hadn't really thought about it in that way, but that, yeah, she burnt through feuds quicker than, I remember making fun of Io Shirai when she first won the, women's NXT championship. I felt like she was burning through a contender like nearly every week there for a minute. But yeah, Charlotte really has. Yeah, it was Rhea Ripley, Nikki Cross, and yeah, now Alexa Bliss.
And she beat Nia, and she beat Shayna, and then, and then for no reason she just beat Doudrop. Like 3 weeks into Doudrop's push, and she lost the title match to Charlotte.
Yeah, holy smokes. Wow. And like I know that I've mentioned a lot recently, or at least I feel like I have, that I kind of realized that they're going to have to go to the well more often than they used to with some of these matches.
They will.
But this obviously has been a little bit of overkill as far as you know how you know yeah you don't want that much interaction like. Charlotte Flair doesn't need to be having matches every week.
No, she really doesn't. I mean, I guess as far as what they could, they've been doing, they've been rehabbing Shayna Baszler as the baby face who breaks women's arms. how are we supposed to take what she did to Eva Marie? Were we really supposed to feel sorry for Eva Marie?
They have had her assault the two most unsympathetic people on the roster. Yeah. Nia Jax is not sympathetic because she is simply a larger woman than everyone else in the division. You know, she kind of has that natural advantage that doesn't tend to buy you sympathy if you get your ass kicked. And then, yeah, Eva Marie. And it's just like, like you said, like, are you trying to make her a babyface? The actions would not belie one of a babyface. But yeah, I don't think they've gotten the reaction that they were expecting to in either case.
No. I don't know exactly what they're expecting here. I don't.
Yeah, it's a weird one. but yeah, I don't know if you can't really run Shayna and Charlotte again so soon though. Or I mean, I guess you could.
I guess you can. It's just, I guess we're really going to see what comes of this draft. I don't know exactly what the answer is, because I don't know if you want to move Bianca over without getting the belt back from Becky, although I guess maybe you could. I'm not sure what the fix is.
More bodies I think would be useful. I'm not sure. I think Jeremy and I talked about it a little bit, but to me it would seem with the Frankie Monet law, she might be one of the women available from NXT to move on up to the main roster to help fill some holes, because
yeah,
she never needed to be in NXT, really.
No, she never needed to be NXT. Dakota Kai is more than ready.
Oh, yes.
Aaliyah, the 8th-year senior, it has to be ready, or if she's not, then you know, out of here. By this point,
yeah,
I was very surprised that Io Shirai and Zoe Stark retained the tag team championships, because it really looks like they are going to build a lot of NXT 2.0 around Toxic Attraction. So that was a weird decision, because Io's basically in purgatory. Zoe Stark ain't over a damn bit, and you know, and you know, obviously, as I said, they're going to be building a large portion of NXT 2.0 around Toxic Attraction. So it made no sense for them to retain. But supposedly, as far as the draft is concerned, everyone's open to be drafted. Absolutely everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would not be unopposed to Stark and Shirai, if this is sort of what you're implying. They never end up losing the championships, technically, and Shirai just gets called up. Because, like you said, like she's more than ready, and she would definitely be a face that would help out quite a bit.
Yeah, she absolutely would. Yeah, so yeah, I definitely see some, you know, movement up from NXT definitely to help out. Yeah, it's just that the main matches are so, I don't want to say so played out. Yeah, a lot of them are very played out. they really are.
Oh, you know, yes. There's not a whole lot of new ground to cover. Because what did we say? That maybe Becky and Alexa would be a somewhat new matchup?
Becky and Alexa haven't had a go around in a few years. Probably been a couple of years since the last time Becky and Charlotte ever wrestled each other, but it doesn't really feel that way because they wrestled so much. Sasha and Charlotte really haven't had a...
It's
been a while for them, but once again, they did it a lot when they did it.
Yeah.
I mean, Bianca has really the freshest thing for anything involving the women would be Bianca versus Charlotte.
Oh, yes.
Not counting their one match in NXT, that I guess most people have forgotten about, other than that part where Rhea Ripley did her entire entrance pose before running to make the save on Bianca. that's been brought up many times.
I forgot that was the case.
But otherwise, yeah, I mean, a lot of these matches have been done before, and I'm not sure who you can really mega push to get some newer matches going. We shall see what they cook up. I've yet to see anything that states exactly how the draft is going to go. I mean, last year they did draft pools. You know, these people were available on Friday, only these people were available on Monday, and then Raw gets two picks for all SmackDown's one because they're the 2 hour, because they're the 3 hour show.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like that was the format, but they changed the format so frequently.
They were saying, didn't on Raw they mention about tag teams being split up?
Yes.
Most of the past years, they've been included as a unit.
I mean, they've kind of mentioned that it's either or still, I think. It always seems crazy to me, like, if you want one of them, take all of them in that kind of a situation. Like, if you can draft a whole group, it just seems like a sensible way to draft. You're getting multiple superstars for one pick.
Right, yeah.
So are you looking for what the factoids may be on this year's draft, or is there still nothing out there?
I got a factoid. Since the last initial draft in 2016, who is the one person who has never switched brands?
Wow, there's one person who has never switched brands, huh?
Yeah. OK, Okay. It, maybe not be the only person, woman.
Oh.
You want one more hint?
Has Charlotte not been on SmackDown?
Yep, she has.
Okay, I thought she had. Has Carmella always been on SmackDown?
That's the one. You got it.
Okay, yeah. Nice. I can't believe I pulled that out. I knew that Charlotte seemed wrong, but I was also trying to think of who might be on that list. That's kind of wild that she's always been on SmackDown.
Yeah.
I guess, what, she could move to Raw potentially with her... is it just boyfriend right now? I don't know if they're engaged or whatever state of...
I don't know.
They are. I guess I wouldn't be completely surprised if she moved to Raw finally because of him announcing Raw. They have tended to keep the couples together recently. So. We shall see on that front, too. I'm trying to think of what else happened with the... what else is involved with the ladies on the main roster. Because I don't think there's anything else... Oh yeah, because that's what it... all the stuff from the pay-per-view there.
Oh, that's right. Remember last year when they released the draft pool, they accidentally released it in the order everyone was drafted.
I did not realize they did that. Oh, that's hilarious. Maybe it's a good thing that I don't tend to look at those things too early. Although it still doesn't ever feel like a surprise, you know what I mean? I'm like, you're staying in the WWE, like I guess because I watch both programs, it in a lot of ways it does not affect me directly. So I do hope for some fresh matchups. And I'm not sure, like, I'm trying to think if one Roman Reigns needs some fresh matchups. Like, because he's going to have Brock at Crown Jewel. I don't know if that's going to end their feud or not. I've got a feeling that that might be a feud extender. Your thoughts?
There is a very good chance that something will happen to extend that feud. I don't know how long, because it's a weird. It would be weird to do the match to Crown Jewel and then again at WrestleMania, and then it's, you know, what other pay per views is Brock doing during on this deal of his? I know. Well, they put him on the Royal Rumble poster, so that's a lock.
Oh.
He would do Survivor Series if he's the Universal Champion, but I'm thinking he won't be. Since, and I don't know if they'll put Brock in any other match on that show. The December pay per view was a throwaway. I wouldn't waste Brock on that. The January 1st pay per view that they're doing 2 weeks after whatever the December pay per view, because they are not calling it TLC at this point.
Oh.
I don't think that'll be a Brock show. I don't know to put Brock on Elimination Chamber. That'd be interesting. Be interesting just to see where that all goes. Wait, what? Oh, yeah, that's right. You asked me about if I thought there might be a screwy finish. in Brock versus Roman. It's very possible. But then I don't know if I see where their definitive match would be on the upcoming schedule.
Oh, yeah, that's I guess that is interesting. I do think that you're right. There wouldn't really be anything until the Rumble to have a final match. So that's a long way off. That is a long way off.
Yeah. As far as WrestleMania is concerned, I'm not going to believe The Rock isn't doing WrestleMania until we're past the point that he would need to be back for.
Yeah. One thing that Jeremy and I also did not talk about, which gets us way off the topic of the ladies here, and on to some freshness. Bearcat Keith Lee is now in the WWE. It was nice to see him presented the way I expected him to be presented in the first place.
Yeah, no, it was. I don't give a crap what they call him as long as he's getting these dominant wins. There's someone I'd like to see go to SmackDown to challenge Roman Reigns eventually.
That would be a fresh face. Roman Reigns is certainly someone that will need some fresh faces, and Keith Lee could potentially be on that list. Because, yeah. I mean, we are going to get, and did you get to this one, during the rundown? I guess we're going to be getting a Big E versus Roman Reigns match. It's Survivor Series.
That is, I believe, most likely.
Yeah, so I don't think that's going to get used again at WrestleMania then.
No. I see Big E getting a good length of reign. Not sure what you do with him at WrestleMania. Because, you know, WrestleMania with the babyface coming in defending the title is somewhat out of the ordinary. No. Even though, of course, there's the two championships and the women's championships get pushed to that level as well. So, and we don't even know if it's going to be one or two nights. There's wiggle room there. But you know, Big E's had his moment. You know, I'm not sure exactly who. Well, I guess you got to kind of give him a large challenge. Maybe Brock. Maybe by then they'll think Omos is ready for something. Who knows? I feel like at points where the babyface has gone as defending champion at WrestleMania, it's at least been presented as a humongous challenge for them.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, like you said, like it's kind of, since you usually want to have the conquering hero, they usually come in as the non-champion to just win the belt, and that's kind of obvious that you should be rooting for them. When they're defending, it's like you said, it's just it's a different dynamic, so it does help to make them look like the proverbial David in the battle with Goliath. So, yeah, because I don't know if they have anyone else of that size, really. Because Damian Priest would maybe be the only one. But he's still not like almost sized.
Right.
I mean, he's a big guy, but oh man. Almost is just a house. In the most complimentary kind of a way. Yeah. So yeah, Big E's gonna be an interesting one too, I guess, for WrestleMania.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. Maybe he does have his reign end at the Royal Rumble, and then he can come into a fresh matchup in that kind of a role. Who knows? Who knows? But yeah, Keith Lee, good to see you back on TV. Glad that they're doing right by you finally. Damian Priest continues to beat Sheamus continuously. You know, this is another one where I kind of I forgot how much on Raw they had more Extreme Rules matches than they did on Extreme Rules itself.
Yeah, they certainly did.
That was one thing. I'm scrolling through the review and I'm like, oh man, that was so, like, I guess that was one of the reasons why I wasn't gonna be, that I wasn't disappointed with Extreme Rules. Oh my gosh. And I guess, how did I forget to talk about, we kind of talked about Roman Reigns a little bit. This would have been a fun part to see too. I liked the weird heartbeat thing they did to wake the demon back up for Finn.
That was awful, but okay.
I guess I enjoyed that. You know, it kind of gives it an Undertaker type of thing going on for him.
That man was flopping on the floor like a damn fish.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was kind of the point. You know, he's supposed to be kind of getting, like, electric shocks or something like that. So, yeah, I'm good with it. He's possessed by the demon, man. You gotta let him, writhe and contort. Like, it's not a pretty process. So, but I really, like, I kind of thought, I'm like, oh, is Balor actually going to win here? Like, they're doing all this special stuff right now. Like, is he, is he going to be coming out as champion? And then the turnbuckle busts. And that was the wildest thing ever. Like, it'll be interesting to see if they address that at all on SmackDown.
I'm sure they'll address it, but I don't know if they'll ever resolve it.
but that, I guess to me, that's one of those things. I remember when I was at one of the Raws that happened to be at the Schottenstein Center and not Nationwide Arena. And it was one of the times that the Big Show broke the ring with a superplex.
Yeah.
And it would have been weird to see that purposeful rope busting happen in real time. Like, that is definitely not one of those things you expect to see happen when you're at a live event. And not something that happens all that frequently. You know, I don't think this one is at least purposefully ever happened before. I mean, this was on purpose, right? This was not just like some really, really bad luck for Finn Balor. Just because Roman really seemed to feed into the ending right away.
Well, yeah, you have to capitalize on it. I don't think it's going to turn out that Roman Reigns was involved.
No. I'm with you on that point.
I mean, the only thing that would make sense is if Bray Wyatt's coming back. Because otherwise, how did that happen? No one was at ringside to cut the ropes. It's not like the ropes are, or at least they're supposed to be on some kind of connected to something electronically or anything of that nature, or mechanically.
Yeah, and it did almost look like an electronic detaching.
I'm sure that's what it actually was, of course.
Well, I mean, just because, yeah, it was a really awkward kind of, yeah, like, you don't see that. Like, that kind of would have been fun to see live. I think it was a really weird and screwy angle that they, like, I don't know why they did all the hocus pocus just to have that happen, I suppose.
Well, it's more hocus pocus on top of hocus pocus. You live by the hocus pocus, you die by the hocus pocus. You live by the hokey pokey, you die by the hokey pokey.
I guess so. Oh man, yeah, that was kind of wild, and something that I guess it's kind of fun seeing those wacky things like that live. And I did think that overall, I did think that it was a good crowd. I was very pleased. I thought that they did not have that much audio sweetener because they were actually making noise. So I was proud of the Columbus crowd, even though I wasn't there. But yeah, the Raw crowd in Cincy definitely got some more Extreme Rules matches, though, in general. Because yeah, that Sheamus Damian Priest thing was a no DQ. I'm trying to remember. Do we want to say a little prayer for Jackson Ryker? He got his 5 seconds of fame. I think that he is not long for this world now.
No. It's not going to surprise me if the fallout from draft week is going to be release week.
Yeah, that is entirely possible. It has quieted down for a minute. Like, I felt like they were releasing someone every couple of weeks there for a moment. And it has been all quiet on that front recently. It would be interesting if, I guess I'm with you. I wouldn't be surprised if the draft kind of reveals some stuff. Like, it was kind of weird that Elias got all these week after week of videos about changing. And I don't feel, he's never actually appeared on Raw, has he?
No, they've completely given up on those.
That's kind of weird. I guess that's another one where I hadn't thought about him not being around. So, trying to think of what else happened on. Yeah, I don't know. Big E and Lashley had the cage match.
Yeah.
So, there was at least the two. I thought that there was more than two Extreme Rules matches, but maybe that was it. Yeah, that was it. So, yeah, and it does look like, much to no one's surprise, we're getting a Bobby Lashley versus Bill Goldberg second match up here. sometime in the near future.
Yeah, it's what it's looking like. It's, you know, looking like most likely Crown Jewel. Let them have their short match, no title involved. Goldberg can win it. Yeah, nothing too crazy there.
No harm, no foul. Well, let's change gears a little bit. Before Jeremy and I recorded, I had not watched a decent swath of AEW. And one thing that we did not talk about was Arn Anderson's promo to Cody Rhodes. And, you know, I know I talked to Jeremy about it last week, but you could kind of feel the crowd turning on Cody last week, and I really feel like the crowd has really turned on Cody at this point, and it's kind of funny to see, and I do think that Cody maybe is finally wise to it and is starting to play into things too.
Oh, I hope so. I mean, we're all having our fun with Arn Anderson's promo and talking about his Glock. I said Glock. Arn Anderson has always had quite the way with words, and he certainly proved that again last night. He, told Cody off about being soft, about being weak, and how if he's ever carjacked, he's gonna shoot the carjacker. Good for him. If he wants to try that, he's more than welcome to. I guess it was funny. It was a good line. Once again, as I mentioned earlier, before we started recording, it's, you know, people aren't talking about aren't falling off the apron last week anymore. People aren't making fun of him for that. They're probably not going to make fun of him for anything else ever again. That man is strapped.
Yeah, evidently.
And he is ready. Arn Anderson has killed before, and he will kill again. But yeah, it was an interesting way to play it. I mean, to say that Cody has lost his edge or gone soft, but it also feels like it's setting up Cody for a redemption story, and it's just like, no, man, no. There's no redeeming you at this point. You have to go heel. And I'm not even sure if that's the answer, because it just so feels like Cody is so disconnected from everything else happening in AEW. It is like him and his nightmare family, and then creating their own, you know, rogues gallery of villains with QT Marshall's crew and all that. It just feels like they have just created their own universe within AEW, and no one else comes in and no one else comes out, and It's a weird fit at this point. Yeah, turning heel is probably and then starting back mingling again with the rest of the roster. it's the only thing that'll help.
It is kind of weird how divorced he is from the most of the roster.
He really is. He is never. Yeah, well. I was trying to think. Is there anything like he's never interacted with? He's never had any. You know, there's gotta be.
But
it's been a long time since he's interacted with anyone outside of it. What we know is his universe. We know him and QT Marshall are really best friends and they're in a business together and all that. And you know, QT Marshall guys only ride with him, and they were basically only feuding with Cody and his friends, other than the one deal with Paul White. It's so weird how divorced he is from the rest of the roster, and that's if he has any hope of getting it back, he's got to turn heel and he's got to start interacting with the regular roster again, because it's just so weird right now. And no, there is no redemption story for Cody as a babyface. Which is why I was like, is Cody being soft? Is that really his problem? Is that the biggest problem he's got? No, it's the over the top entrances. It's the gaudy ring outfits. It's the pretentious promos. And yes, it's putting QT Marshall on my fucking TV. I take that one personally. and having his own world that disconnects from the rest of the show. And for a while, it's, you know, they had Cody do that deal where he said if he lost to Jericho, he would never challenge for the world title ever again. And 2 years later, they've actually stuck to that. But it's at the cost of Cody feeling like he's not a part of the regular AEW roster anymore. It seemed like they created the TNT Championship to give him something to do, and it worked for a little while. You know, he did. He had some good feuds, and a year or so ago, he was not completely divorced from the rest of the roster.
Oh, correct.
The problems didn't start really until like earlier this year. You know, maybe around the Shaq deal is really where it started to feel like Cody's just in his own universe. He's just really into himself. It's just, that's when he started getting really smug in his promos and his delivery and everything else. I think that maybe if you want to hit the point where it really started. Obviously, the quote unquote patriotic promo is where it really kicked into hyper gear. But yeah, a year ago, but then he lost the TNT Championship, and never went back into contention for that. Then he really didn't do anything for months and months, and once again, they did the Shaq deal with Jade Cargill and Red Velvet mixed in. Then, not too long after that was the QT Marshall turn angle, which no one wanted. Nobody asked for. I cannot reiterate that enough. That if it maybe started at the Shaq deal, but it started to tip over more and more with the QT Marshall angle. The patriotic promo with the go-go was a real tipping point.
Yeah, and then that was bad. Kind of,
and then, yeah. It's been rolling downhill ever since.
Oh yeah, I hadn't thought about how divorced he is from the rest of that roster, because it's wild that, like, it's not like the Young Bucks, they don't even mention him at all.
No, they don't. They don't. I don't believe that they're friends anymore. Now, of course, it's been said, and it's probably been this way for a while, that the EVPs have no real power anymore, and Tony Khan's basically just booking the shows himself, just in charge of everything. I don't know how much longer he can stand under that pressure, especially with his other duties involved with the Jaguars and Fulham. Is that the soccer team?
Yeah, Fulham. Really, yes.
Fulham. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if anyone, if he hires anyone else to help him out with some things, because that seems like a lot. If the EVPs are doing nothing anywhere, basically, other than maybe they're in charge of their own stuff, and that takes up a good chunk of the show. So who knows?
That's still a lot. If they're not really working on anything like Rampage, but Elevation or Dark, that is a lot of programming to go through.
And to
kind of set up.
Yeah, but no, I mean, it's been, now I think Cody still at least until recently, had a lot of say over his own. Over his own storylines. He had to have. Because a lot of really bad ideas have made their way onto TV still. It's not as unfocused and messy as it was in maybe the first few months of AEW's existence, but some stuff still trickles downward, and usually it involves Cody.
No.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. Like, I don't think anything like this has ever happened in wrestling history. The only thing I could think of that was kind of like this is when they did that stuff, when WCW had that stuff with Glacier, where they brought in all these like video game type characters. You know, you had, you know, Ernest the Cat Miller as his karate buddy, and Canyon was dressed up with what was Mortis, and they brought in Brian Clark as Wrath, and they basically just wrestled each other over and over again in some weird martial arts division. That's the only thing I can compare it to. Just these people just having their own niche within a show, and it's just they do not interact with anyone else. But even those guys did interact with other people. It's such a weird thing, and yeah, but bottom line, to kind of wrap this part up, no, there is no redeeming Cody Rhodes as a babyface. He has to go heel, and he has to, you know, mix in with the rest of the roster, or there's no place for him anymore.
He's in an interesting spot.
Yeah.
For himself currently. Yeah, because I don't know if he's necessarily good for, even a return to the TNT Championship.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, I don't know what that does for him. Like, I understand him being the first one and regaining it once, but beyond that, it's just kind of like, dude, you're like holding the Intercontinental Championship again. Like, aren't you supposed to be the main champion in your own promotion at some point? It is kind of interesting, speaking of the Elite, Adam Cole getting a big win over a well-pushed Jungle Boy this week.
Yeah, I don't know. They had a very, very good match. I mean, I imagine Cole would win this early in his tenure. So no, that was very good. Adam Cole is definitely fitting in now. Someone who's immediately fitting in with the AEW roster and putting out some good stuff and giving this Elite storyline a real shot in the arm. Yeah, it's good. I love me some Adam Cole.
Yeah, he has definitely brought a different swagger to the Elite, which has kind of helped a little bit. There are still just, there are a lot of people involved with that group.
Yeah.
And it gets a little much. Like, I have the same thing with, like, I don't mind groups, but some of their groups are just huge. Like, I still don't completely know who's really all in the Nightmare family. I'm trying to think of who else was on the show. Oh, Dark Order. Like, sometimes there are so many people in that I lose track of them.
Oh, yeah.
I don't who know.
Who was the guy from the Hardy family office who got pinned in that match? I swear I've never seen that man before in my life.
That was another one where I was just like, hold on, who dis? Jorah Joel is, I think, the man that took the pin. Cool. Yeah. Yep, never heard of him either. I figured Jack Evans was going to take the pin. Or Angelico.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a that was a wild matchup, and it was very nice with them being in Rochester to have a nice coming together moment for the Dark Order.
Yes, that was very well done. Yeah, I really appreciated that. Yes, a 16-man tag match on its on its face is pretty damn ridiculous, but no, they made this work, and it was a lot of fun, and it was a nice moment. So I'm glad they did that.
It was a whole lot of good vibes for everyone involved. And yeah, I don't I like I guess I don't know in a lot of ways I don't know what you do with the Dark Order when you break them up.
You don't. You just don't break them up. You just use this to stop the dissension. Just kind of play along with it until Hangman returns, and
No.
then the focus it goes on Hangman challenging for the for finally challenging for the title.
Yeah, and a sub part of that story was Anna Jay and Ty Conti getting the win over Penelope Ford and the Bunny. That was pretty expected with Negative One also coming in to
Yeah,
help them
that was,
celebrate.
yeah, another sweet moment. It's really cool. It's really cool what they do for that kid, and you can tell. You've told Anna Jay's been gone for a long time, but then Tay Conti really took up the mantle of bringing that kid with her basically everywhere when they were still in Orlando and. I mean, not Orlando, Jacksonville, and it's really sweet. It's really cool. It's really cool that they did that in Rochester. Obviously, the last time they did it, that they when they re initially did a tribute show for Brody Lee, it was in Daly's place. Maybe at most 1,000 people were there. So, but to do it in his hometown with that crowd there, it was really cool.
They know how to put you over in your city instead of having you losing it all the time
Novel concept,
to
amazing.
get heat, which doesn't usually work. It's just groan inducing because everyone knows it's coming. Yeah, so it was a novel concept to just pay tribute to one of your wrestlers in definitely a way that would not have happened in the WWE. One thing that I was very surprised by, I guess I was not expecting Sammy Guevara to be the one to end Miro's reign as TNT champion.
I was not expecting that either. It was definitely kind of out of nowhere. I maybe felt a little that they could go with the title switch, but it just didn't feel right to me. Yeah, maybe it got a pop from the crowd, but forget anything real life that the guy's ever been accused of or has paid his penance for or whatnot. I just don't like Sammy Guevara as a babyface. He just has a naturally smug look on his face that makes you want to punch him in the face. I don't understand how anyone could look at that man and think that guy and think he should be a babyface.
Yeah, it's kind of a strange spot to have him in because much like Cody Rhodes is divorced from the roster, I'm kind of lost on what's happened. Sammy Guevara regained his place as Chris Jericho's protege, but then hasn't been around Chris Jericho at all in what feels like months at this point.
Oh no, it seems like the inner circle is going to be drifting apart here. I mean, I don't even know why they still wear the vests anymore. It's just. Do you realize how stupid it was that Chris Jericho and Jake Hager were getting destroyed last week on Rampage? And they made it very obvious that, of course, that Sammy Guevara and Santana Ortiz were in the building.
Oh.
And well, they did nothing.
And the same can be said, because didn't Sammy Guevara end up getting beat up later on the show, too, on Rampage?
Yeah, but, that was after, so at least Jericho and Hager have an excuse.
Oh, yes.
Once again, Santana Ortiz have no excuse.
Correct.
It's a weird deal, and it's just, they're just... Yeah, it just feels like they're drifting apart, which I'm fine with them no longer being apart. I think they outlived their usefulness a while ago as a unit. You know, babyface factions are tough anyway. You know, at least long term ones. I mean, there can be temporary partnerships and things of that nature. I mean, I guess it works for the Dark Order, but that's a different type of circumstance.
When you're throwing in that much comedy, it's just a different dynamic than trying to be a serious badass baby face group.
I do not care for Sammy Guevara as a baby face one bit, and you wouldn't have seen me if I was in that crowd. You wouldn't have seen me cheering for that. I'm Team Miro all the way.
I thought with the way they're positioning him, he was going to retain. Like, it was a nice story that they were telling, but they hadn't been pushing Guevara that much, honestly. Like, I didn't feel like he really got much of a spotlight in the Inner Circle Wars, really. They didn't start to have him rack up any wins on Dynamite, at least. He may have racked up some on Dark or Elevation. But those still don't really count. I feel like if you're going to give him the championship, he needed more build before getting said championship. So, yeah, that part was, to me, a little strange. About that win, too. Like, it seemed like it kind of came out of nowhere in a lot of ways, even though they've had this story going for a while now, since he's been Fuego del Sol's buddy since Jump Street, really, since the contract signing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Any other, is there something burning from NXT 2.0 that you want to talk about before getting out of here?
Not particularly.
Fair enough. Built on beer of the show. This past weekend, there were a couple of anniversaries here in Columbus. One of them was for Wolf's Ridge Brewing, their 8th anniversary, 50% blend, 10.6% alcohol, 40 IBUs. It is a wide range of barrel-aged stouts, barley wines, and Belgian ales mixed with a fresh imperial stout. And it is pretty daggone delicious. I will say that. Like, it is wildly delicious. And I am looking forward there. We also bought a very large bottle of the 100% blend. So it's nothing but the barrel-aged stouts, barley wines, and Belgian ales. It'll be interesting to see how different that tastes from this version, which has the Imperial Stout with it. So yeah, very much looking forward to it, and the three cans that I have left of this 50% blend. At Wolf's Ridge Brewing, and my handle is at Frango11. His is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at many places, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Stitcher. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.